WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A weekend of immigration protests in Los Angeles. National Guard troops sent in at the direction of President Trump amid protests around ICE agents who have been raiding establishments and rounding up those suspected of being in the country illegally. ABC's Matt Gutman in Los Angeles on Sunday night.
A federal law enforcement here and others deployed tear gas, pellets, flashbangs, trying to disperse the crowd. It didn't work. Everybody came back in, and they're sort of waiting for the next phase of this standoff.
Governor Gavin Newsom has objected to the deployment of the National Guard, saying local officials had the protests under control and that things only got worse when the National Guard troops were sent in. President Trump's new ban on travel to the U.S. by citizens from a dozen mostly African and Middle Eastern countries took effect overnight. Israeli forces have seized an aid boat bound for Gaza on board environmentalist Greta Thunberg and other activists. This is ABC News.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Starting July 1st, you can take even more time getting to your seat at the movies. That is, if you're going to AMC theaters. The Hollywood Reporter says commercials will start playing before movies, along with coming attractions. The theater chain set up a deal with National CineMedia. With commercials, the Dolby surround sound ads, theater etiquette ads, and previews, you actually have time to watch another movie on your phone before your featured attraction starts. But use headphones, please. Otherwise, it would be rude. Sydney Sweeney has been in the news quite a bit lately. She's now part of a new thriller, and not the kind that involves her selling her bathwater. She and Julianne Moore have teamed up in a new thriller called Echo Valley. Moore plays a divorced single mom raising her daughter, played by Sweeney, who is running with the wrong crowd and has a drug problem, which causes her and her mom to go broke. Might have to use some of that soap money. The film is directed by BAFTA winner Michael Pierce and drops on Apple TV June 13th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers' homestand continues. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a three-game series against the Atlanta Braves tonight at American Family Field. The crew got shut out by the Padres yesterday, 1-0. Milwaukee leaving 10 base runners stranded and just couldn't find a way to score some runs. Pat Murphy.
We didn't get the big hit when we needed to. We could have scored, you know, a ton of runs. We had a ton of traffic. It seemed like we just didn't come up with a big hit.
The Brewers losing this series to San Diego 2-1. NBA, the Pacers fall to the Thunder in Oklahoma City, 123-107. Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton said it seemed like the refs allowed them to be more physical in Game 2.
You know, the officials to, you know, let us play a little bit more. You know, so just got to do a better job playing through there. You know, I just got to figure out how to be better earlier in games. You know, but, you know, kudos to them. They're a great defensive team, but we can do a lot better job and, you know, watch the film and see if we can get better, you know, going into Game 3.
The series tied at one game apiece, Game 3 Wednesday night in Indianapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thundershowers possible today and a high in the mid to upper 60s this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated shower, thundershower possible, low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and warmer with a high tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
Matt Nair on Air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber, and we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Back at it on a Monday morning. Welcome in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe PM Yankee. This is the Midwest Farm Report. How was the weekend? Did you get into a little dairy celebration? I see that the weather did cause a little challenge for some of our dairy breakfasts, depending on when and where they were. My home county up in Oconee County, they had a bunch of rain, but the crowd still showed up. You know, it's only a sliver of the dairy story we're telling in the month of June. A lot of staff at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin carry that enthusiasm for our dairy products, our dairy farms, beyond our borders, in fact, beyond U.S. borders. Going to talk about trade shows and the valuable role they play in trying to educate consumers and retailers about Wisconsin's dairy goodness. Stick around for that. Weather-wise, Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist, on the way. If you've got rainfall reports for me this morning, go ahead and share. Our talk text line is open, 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. It does look like you might get another chance of rainfall reporting for me coming up this afternoon. Showers, maybe even some thunderstorms developing today. Daytime high is not much better than 65, and you will notice the winds out of the west today. 10 gusting to 25 miles an hour, so that temperature definitely going to feel cool. The amounts of rain, less than a tenth of an inch, unless you're under a thunderstorm. We'll see how that all plays out. Tomorrow's sunshine back on the forecast, 77. Wednesday, sunshine and 86 figures. Today is the beginning of the Wisconsin State FFA Convention with their day of service. All that and more on the way on a Monday.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Biodiesel is growing in the Midwest, and Illinois is a primary example. The people who are accelerating biodiesel programs just south of us also want to see Wisconsin expand biodiesel usage. I'm Stephanie Hoff from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, and I was recently in Illinois and Chicagoland with Clean Fuels Alliance America, looking at the whole chain of biodiesel production, from the beans getting dropped off at the plant to riding on a boat on the Chicago River that runs on biodiesel. The state has tax incentives for using it, and it's also helping advance sustainability goals. Pete Probst is the president of Indigenous Energy, which is a renewable energy consultant. They work with groups like the Illinois Soybean Association and the Chicago Park District. Pete loves renewable diesel so much, he rigged up his own ride back in the day to run on used cooking oil.
It's a pretty cool experience. I found an old 1979 Mercedes-Benz on eBay. It was in New Jersey, and I bought it. I had to take a plane, and then I took a train, and then I took a bus, and I saw the car. And the reason I was looking for this type of car is because it's a diesel engine that was considered indestructible and is very good for using used cooking oil and biodiesel to run it on rather than regular diesel. And so, I bought the vehicle and drove it all the way back to Chicago.
That just kind of underscores your passion for renewable fuels. Tell me a little bit about your career background.
Yeah, so I went to school for environmental science, and as soon as I heard about people that were taking basically diesel engines and finding their own fuel source, I was hooked. I'm like, this seems like a no-brainer. A friend of mine, Fred Barker, we competed in the business plan competition, and we got third place. Our idea was to make biodiesel on the premises of a fleet that was going to use it. And so we got some money, and with that money, we started our company. Basically, that's how we started Indigenous Energy, was out of a business plan competition at UIC. And so my role with the B20 Club, it's, well, first, I guess, the B20 Club is an association, Illinois Soybean Association-funded project that works with fleets across the state that want to use biodiesel. And so it's fleets that are either have been using biodiesel or want to use biodiesel, but ultimately they have to use at least 20% blends for 6 months out of the year. And so there's a wide range of different companies and vehicle types all across the state. It's been a very successful project in terms of showing others, yeah, there's all different types of fleets that are using biodiesel. It's not something special to a specific niche market. Anybody can use biodiesel. It's definitely something that could be replicated in any state, really.
Is it true that Chicago is referred to as the green hub because of your work on biodiesel?
I mean, I'm not sure how many people think that, but I think in terms of what we've done with the Chicago Park District and what their leadership has allowed us to sort of increase the blends, you know, we go up to a 50% biodiesel blend in unmodified equipment, and then we've got some modified vehicles that go to 100% biodiesel. This is something that not a lot of other fleets are doing, especially at a municipal level, and so I feel like, you know, we've been talking about it a lot and trying to get the word out that this is something that's possible. And so, you know, if somebody wants to say that we're part of the Green Hub, I'll take it.
Give us an example of the equipment that's running on these higher blends of biodiesel.
Sure. So the 40 to 50% blends, we put in everything. And so that could be like, you know, riding lawnmowers, for instance. It could be the tractors that do the beach combing. It could be the garbage trucks. And then recently, well, I guess in 2018, we got grant money from the Illinois Soybean Association with the B20 Club, and that allowed us to purchase the equipment to modify some of these vehicles that run on B100. And so that's the ultimate, really, is to be able to use B100 all the time.
You said you do some of the technical side, so basically troubleshooting what's going wrong, what's going right when you're implementing a biodiesel program. What are some of the main challenges that people run into when they want to switch over?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so what we realized a long time ago that people have a lot of misconceptions about biodiesel, and it may be if they're a fleet owner that's been around or a fleet operator that's been around for a long time, there admittedly were some issues with biodiesel quality, like in the early 2000s, right? And so they remember that, and they're like, well, we tried it, we don't want to do it again. But it's important for fleets to understand that the fuel quality specifications regarding biodiesel have been continuously evolving. And so the biodiesel that's produced today is way higher quality than it was 10 or 15 years ago. So that's the first thing, is just education to let people know that the fuel quality is great. But then the second thing we want to do is we want to make sure that when they receive biodiesel, good quality biodiesel, when they put it into their tanks, that their tanks are properly maintained and don't have any water, sediment, sludge, microbes, all different types of things that cause bad fuel quality issues. Because if there's an underlying fuel quality issue with these tanks and they start using biodiesel and then those issues come to light, they're going to blame the biodiesel. And so we always want to make sure that any fleet that we're working with, we start on a clean slate. And so that's part of my role with the B20 Club, is to go visit with prospective fleets, check the tanks, send some fuel quality samples off to the lab, find out what's going on, make sure that they're ready for biodiesel.
Can anyone be a part of this B20 Club, even if you're not a part of the Illinois Soybean Group?
Yeah, I think that we have a lot of different types of memberships. And so there's fleet members, but there's also association memberships that cross state lines. And so we've got companies involved that are not even operating biodiesel equipment, but they're still associate members. So there's a lot of opportunities for people to become involved.
And is it going to stay B20 Club, or is it going to become like the B50 Club at some point? Where do you go from here?
That's a good question, because the Illinois State's sales tax incentive is the threshold is increasing to basically B20 next year. There's not as much of a demand for teaching people to use B20 because it's going to be kind of the de facto standard in Illinois. But that's only for people that pay sales tax. So for a lot of municipalities that don't pay sales tax, they may not see that tax benefit, or they may not see that economic benefit. And so they still have a choice. Do they want to use biodiesel or not? So we're still targeting them. But you're right, we want to expand beyond just B20 and go beyond that. And so we're kind of we're talks right now trying to figure out what is that next step going to be.
The general consumer who may not be purchasing B20, for example, you have found that they also see benefits. And it comes down to, frankly, when you're in downtown Chicago, the air that you're breathing.
Right, exactly. And so everybody breathes air, and everybody likes air quality to be, you know, pure as possible. And so that is one of the biggest benefits, is that biodiesel does burn cleaner, and so we all benefit from that. But on top of that, biodiesel has other benefits for the engine. It has a higher lubricity. Lubricity is something that diesel fuel needs to operate a diesel engine properly, and biodiesel provides that. And it also has a higher cetane that helps engines run cleaner and better as well.
I mean, the Lung Association, you have their stamp of approval.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's considered a clean air choice by the American Lung Association. So basically, because they've recognized that biodiesel is a cleaner burning alternative to regular diesel.
So if I'm a farmer in Wisconsin and I'm listening to this, and I want my state to maybe take on some of these similar incentives, similar programs to implement higher blends of biodiesel, what do I do?
A good place to start is to talk to your state soybean association and find out what are they doing regarding biodiesel promotions and research, because a lot of times that's where biodiesel research starts, and a lot of biodiesel, you know, any kind of work usually happens with the soybean associations first. But then also talk to your legislators and tell them this is a product that we want to see more of. It helps benefit the soybean farmers. It's another outlet for the commodity. And so the fact that it helps all different environmental aspects as well as, you know, mechanical aspects of diesel engines, it's really a no-brainer to try to use more of it.
Is there an economic carrot for municipalities? For example, you're working with the Chicago Parks District. They're in the B20 Club. What's the economic carrot to get in on it?
Yeah, so biodiesel, it depends on where you're at. It's state-specific. Depends on what kind of incentives exist to bring the fuel costs down to the same as diesel. But putting that aside, if you're looking at reducing carbon, you're going to have to spend money somewhere. And so what we found is that biodiesel is the best and cheapest way to reduce carbon. Because what are your options, for instance, to get a low-carbon garbage truck, a heavy-duty truck that's powering, you know, doing heavy-duty work all day long? To buy an electric version of that to shave off some carbon is going to be very expensive. And so that's where the economic benefit really is, I think, is when you're looking for sustainability goals.
Final question. How does it do in the winter, these higher biofuel blends?
So higher biodiesel blends above B20 are problematic, depending on the temperatures. But what we've seen at a 20% blend, even in Chicago, if you double your dose of cold flow additive that you typically put in diesel anyway, the biodiesel blends are the same as diesel. Or if you want to go higher than a B20 blend, you can elect to have the Optimus Technologies retrofit, which allows you to run on B100 year-round. Because you're basically heating the biodiesel up. You're bringing it up to a temperature where it can operate all year round.
Pete Probst joining us from Indigenous Energy. They're a renewable energy consultant helping fleets start biodiesel programs. As he said, he works closely with the Illinois Soybean Association to advance the B20 Club so that members can use biodiesel blends of 20% or more seamlessly. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. June is pollinator month, and some Wisconsin lawmakers have introduced a package of bills to protect our bees, butterflies, and other insects. The bills would prevent the DNR from using a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, which are known to harm pollinators. It would also prevent retailers from labeling plants as pollinator-friendly if they've been treated with high levels of pesticides. Great Lakes fisheries could struggle under budget cuts. President Trump is pushing Congress to eliminate the entire biological research program at the U.S. Geological Survey. The ecosystem mission area monitors and conducts research on fish and wildlife populations in the Great Lakes and beyond. If passed, federal wildlife and fisheries research centers across Wisconsin would be shuttered. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into environmental issues across the state, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Weil, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch the Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. State Senator Kelda Royce will be here with our weekly Joint Finance Committee update, as well as headlines from Wisconsin Watch. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
By Burnett Stew. Linda from Reeseville, about a tenth of an inch. It's just kind of little hit and miss out there this morning. It did hit some of our dairy events over the weekend. I saw pictures from O'Connell County. They had our dairy event up in Lena, and they got, I won't say washed out, but I'm sure the crowd was slowed down by some of the rain. What's going on out there this morning? What are you seeing for rainfall totals?
Well, I'm about in that half inch here, there, and all over my backyard, front yard in Eden area, 58 hundredths of an inch. I saw Eau Claire at 31 hundredths, Wausau 41 hundredths, and then there was Green Bay had to weigh in at 3/4 of an inch yesterday. So, yeah, it depended exactly where you were, what you got. And there's some of that out there this morning as well. A cool front's dropping southeastern Wisconsin, lining up from far northeast Wisconsin back to the southwest part of the state, northeast Iowa. And there's rain right behind that boundary, and it's up in northeast Wisconsin, a little more widespread, La Crosse and north up to Eau Claire, Marshfield, that kind of an area, and all the way up to Park Falls and Hayward, seeing a little light rain this morning. That activity will push a bit further south and east during the day. We all will be talking about some rain today. I think showers, maybe a thunderstorm, a little activity this morning, some redevelopment mid or late afternoon into the evening hours. Not a great rainmaker, if you will. A tenth of an inch or two here and there. I don't expect real severe weather, although there was a little indication, hail not out of the question, and a thunderstorm. So just watch that one today. We can't really predict you're going to see it or not, but it may pop up. It ends this evening, and the good news is with clouds and that rain, we stay cool today, and then we start to moderate, heading back toward normal tomorrow, even above normal Wednesday. I'd expect there'll be a lot of 80s in Wisconsin on Wednesday, and then some rain chance Wednesday night, and unfortunately a little more unsteady, if you will, on toward Thursday and Friday, hit and miss showers or isolated thunderstorms. That becomes a chance for the end of the week. Doesn't sound like haymaking weather at all. I'll have forecast details in just a little bit.
The Classic Green Reunion comes to Wisconsin June 12th through the 14th in West Bend. This year's event showcases Model B and industrial tractors, Waterloo Boy engines, and even drills. Come for the tractors and equipment and stay for the tours, vendors, camaraderie, and a good old-fashioned Wisconsin fish fry. To see event details or to register for tours, visit classicgreen.org. The Classic Green Reunion, June 12th through the 14th in West Bend. See you there.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win tickets to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
Keeping Wisconsin strong.
Interesting. So both of the commercials in our weather, outdoor events do. That Classic Green Reunion coming up in the West Bend area later this week. What are we thinking? Will they have favorable weather by then?
It'll be hit and miss showers. you know, but decent temperatures. I like that. I'm looking ahead toward the weekend. Low and mid 70s. That's not hard to tolerate. Should be pretty enjoyable. We back it up on a Monday, though. Scattered showers, maybe an isolated thunderstorm popping up. Even this morning, a small chance yet in the afternoon. And the Compere Financial update does include temps in the 60s today. Upper 60s south, very low 60s in the north, and breezy. West winds 5 to 15. They'll gust up around 25 or better. A small rain chance in the evening and otherwise starting to clear a bit. Upper 40s north, low 50s south, west winds at 5 to 10. And a nicer spell here. Mostly sunny on Tuesday, and I'd expect low and mid 70s. And Wednesday, sunshine, low and mid 80s. But that shower or isolated storm could pop up late Wednesday, Pam. I certainly would expect it overnight and then into Thursday, and then that hit or miss shower through the end of the week.
All right, bud. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you tomorrow and see what more we can garnish from our rainfall reporters.
Absolutely. We'll see you then.
Stumacher, ag meteorologist, catching up with us on a Monday with your Compere Financial Ag Weather Update. Compere Financial is your financial partner committed to agriculture and rural America. Find more at Compere.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. Here's a portion of a conversation recently had on the John and Gordy Show with writer Mike McCabe about the history of milk strikes in Wisconsin.
You know, a lot of people don't know about the milk strikes of 1933.
I did not know.
Not taught in school. Not something that is on very many people's radar, but...
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, and the area I'm talking about where all this started, where the milk strikes were born, is today the reddest of red areas in our country. It is a MAGA Republican stronghold today.
Yeah.
And in the late 1920s and early 1930s, this was a hotbed of progressivism.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. And farmers had it. They weren't getting fair prices. And so they just decided, doggone it, we're going to organize. And in Abbotsford, Wisconsin, which is not far from where our farm was as I was growing up, not far from where the town where my novel is set is at, farmers came together, hundreds of farmers came together to start to organize to withhold their milk. And then not too long after that, 5,000 farmers showed up in nearby Marshfield to continue the organizing campaign. And eventually over 100,000 farmers in Wisconsin had joined the milk strike. They were dumping milk at the roadside and on railroad tracks. And they were blocking, shipment of milk to creameries, to places where it was bottled or made into cheese. They even were blowing up some cheese factories and creameries with dynamite. They were obstructing the roads, erecting blockades to prevent trucks from getting milk products to Madison and Milwaukee.
Wow.
They just decided we're going to shut everything down. There's not going to be milk or any milk products anywhere in the state of Wisconsin. This eventually spread to other dairy states across the country. And this strike got even bigger until it led to massive reform of milk pricing in what became the very first farm bill ever enacted by Congress.
Find out more about the John and Gordy Show and our entire lineup at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A weekend of immigration protests in Los Angeles. National Guard troops sent in at the direction of President Trump amid protests around ICE agents who have been raiding establishments and rounding up those suspected of being in the country illegally. ABC's Matt Gutman in Los Angeles on Sunday night.
The federal
law enforcement here and others deployed tear gas, pellets, flashbangs, trying to disperse the crowd. It didn't work. Everybody came back in, and they're sort of waiting for the next phase of this standoff.
Governor Gavin Newsom has objected to the deployment of the National Guard, saying local officials had the protests under control and that things only got worse when the National Guard troops were sent in. President Trump's new ban on travel to the U.S. by citizens from a dozen mostly African and Middle Eastern countries took effect overnight. Israeli forces have seized an aid boat bound for Gaza on board environmentalist Greta Thunberg and other activists. This is ABC News.
The Brewers homestand continues. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a three-game series against the Atlanta Braves tonight at American Family Field. The crew got shut out by the Padres yesterday, 1-0. Milwaukee leaving 10 base runners stranded and just couldn't find a way to score some runs. Pat Murphy.
We didn't get the big hit when we needed to. We could have scored, you know, a ton of runs. We had a ton of traffic. It seemed like we just didn't come up with a big hit.
The Brewers losing this series to San Diego 2-1. NBA, the Pacers fall to the Thunder in Oklahoma City, 123-107. Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton said it seemed like the refs allowed them to be more physical in Game 2.
You know, the officials said, you know, let us play a little bit more. You know, so just got to do a better job playing through there. You know, I just got to figure out how to be better earlier in games. You know, but, you know, kudos to them. They're a great defensive team, but we can do a lot better job and, you know, watch the film and see if we can get better, you know, going into Game 3.
The series tied at one game apiece. Game 3 Wednesday night in Indianapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll talk to State Senator Chris Larson. We'll have a guest talking about the growth of building trades apprenticeships. And we're joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thundershowers possible today and a high in the mid to upper 60s this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated shower, thundershower possible, low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and warmer with a high tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve-out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on Civic Media Radio. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Rudin appearance on Matinee on Air.
We did want to start off with this, and this is from Lucas Hunt, a Civic Media news reporter.
Nice.
On our Civic Media website, U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden made an appearance at a cheese plant last Thursday where he voiced support for the Trump administration tariffs. I'm just wondering if you happen to be in that audience, Darren, is it, or did folks you know talk about this?
No, I was not present for that event, but I have heard a few different comments from some of the individuals that were either there or seen press releases of it.
And what have you heard from folks?
Well, you know, not necessarily happy. You know, the tariffs are something that's really turned this country around and not necessarily in a good way. You know, it's yes, short-term gain, but I think there's going to be a lot of long-term effects from it that are not going to be on the positive side. So how do we, you know, go about doing our business when we're not sure if we're going to have a market 6 weeks or 2 years from now?
And I'm sure that Derek Van Orden had all kinds of specifics about what he's going to do. Oh, wait, no, that's probably not what happened.
Yeah, you know, it seems pretty vague, and certainly looking at this big, beautiful bill that's being talked about in D.C. right now, he said that he's going to protect the nutrition title of the farm bill to the last extent, which means that he should be voting no on that bill. He voted yes on it because there's $230 billion that's going to be cut from it over the next 10 years. So how is that helping the people that are in most need, which at one point in time in his life, he was one of those people.
That's something he was, you know, we have on video and we've played it on various shows, and he not only made a very, very impassioned argument for protecting specifically SNAP. He was talking about SNAP benefits, but he also, accused the Democrats of lying. And to me, this is a not Democrat or Republican issue. This is a helping people issue. And that SNAP benefit issue is within the farm bill, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Aaron?
That is correct. That's where it's at. And, you know, currently there's 160 plus Republicans that are trying to separate the SNAP title or the nutrition title from the farm bill and trying to make it a farm specific and a nutrition specific bills, which is not good because food and agriculture are all in one. And so let's keep them together.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Why it's the first round pick? They'll.
Sweet summertime gives you a chance to do things maybe you don't get a chance to do any other time of the year, like camp. I remember going to Oconoconee 4-H camp. That was kind of one of the highlights for me. Get away from the farm, see a bunch of your buddies for a little while without the supervision of mom and dad. Well, I'll tell you what, today camps take on a whole different look. It's still a chance to be away, express your independence a little bit, but it's also about extending your education. Ben Jarvo is going to join us with an update on a 4-H Academy coming up that's attracting a lot of attention. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Midwest Farm Report. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke on this, the ninth day of June. Did you know on this day back in 1934, Donald Duck makes his film debut in the movie The Wise Little Hen? Short-tempered duck, typically wearing a sailor's suit, became one of Walt Disney's most famous cartoon characters. First appearance on this day back in 1934. On this day, 1915, Waukesha native Les Paul was born. His actual name, Lester Polfus, but he turned out to be a guitar great. The Les Paul guitars, still in use today, played by artists like Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and Jimmy Page. Les Paul, born on this day in Waukesha, 1915. Some other notable birthdays for you this morning. Actress Natalie Portman is 44. Johnny Depp turns 62 today. And Michael J. Fox, still battling Parkinson's. Today he turns 64. And now you know. Well, like I mentioned, summer gives kids all kinds of opportunities to continue their education or just to have fun. At the 4-H Academy, you get to do both. Ben Jarbo's got more.
The Wisconsin 4-H is once again holding their Summer Academy on the UW-Madison campus. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and I was able to have a talk with Lindsay Spindler. She is the adult advisor and coordinator for this Summer Academy, and she is also a 4-H program educator in Polk County. She shares some information on what kids could expect if they were to attend this camp. But first, she gives an inside look at how this all got started and how it got moved here to Madison.
Summer Academy is a week-long experience on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus where youth can explore things that really spark their interests and learn about career choices and get some hands-on experience doing some really cool workshops, anything from agriculture to diesel mechanic to baking to civic engagement. And they learn just tons of things and get a lot of experience from professionals in those career paths. So traditionally, we had had a youth conference for 4-H. And once COVID hit, we kind of put a pause on that, which gave us the opportunity to revamp it into something
that would allow youth to explore their interests even further. So we created Summer Academy 3 years ago.
And it sounds like it's a lot of hands-on work and stuff. What age range is this for? Is it for high school students, or is it for really anything from grade school through high school?
So this experience is designed for youth 8th grade through 11th grade. Those that are, you know, really looking to figure out what they're going to do in their future. So they are able to then come down, they experience a little bit of campus life, staying in the dorms, visiting different campus facilities from, you know, the ag lab and the STEM lab. We also visit Madison Area Technical College. They partner with us to provide some of our tracks as well.
And during their time there, what are some of, more specifically, what are some of the areas where students can join to go explore these options? What are some of those specific options?
So youth are able to go on campus tours to learn more about the campus itself. We have a lot of really fun evening activities that are hosted by campus staff. Some of the other places that they'll visit, the STEM lab, they'll go to Madison Area Technical College and get work in their shops, specifically for the transportation experience. They'll learn about different power tools and building things.
And these students at these labs and stuff, do they get to participate and do any of the work?
Yes. Yeah, so everybody who participates in this track, these tracks, they are able to do hands-on learning. So everything that they're learning about, they're going to be doing. So from changing tires and oil to, you know, baking souffles, they are doing all the activities.
And if we look in past years, how many students typically go to this event, and then how many students are you expecting to go this year?
So Summer Academy is open to not just 4-H members. We try to open it up to any youth that are interested in participating. The past few years, we've had well over 100 students participate.
Spindler says that if students were to pick the agriculture track, they would spend their time up at the Arlington Research Station doing work around the farm. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Ah, camp. Thanks, Ben. Well, as we get rolling on a Monday morning, the markets are pretty quiet overall. Friday in Chicago, the barrel cheese stood still at 186. 40-pound block cheese on Friday dropped 6 1/4 to 185 and 3/4, while AA butter was down 0.25 cents, closed the week 255 1/2. Now, this morning, the July Class 3 milk that goes into cheese down a nickel, 1879. August closed 32 cents stronger, 1933 a hundredweight. So far on a Monday, July corn's up a penny, December new crop down a penny, currently at 448. July soybeans are currently up a penny, with November new crop up a penny at 1038. July wheat, that's down a penny, currently at 554 a bushel. And if you're curious, Dow Jones Industrial Average, at least right now, at least this snapshot, about 30 points higher in overnight trade. Coming up next, well, our dairy messages being shared at June dairy events all across the state, but beyond our borders, trade shows turn into an excellent education model for dairy farmers of Wisconsin to bring our America's Dairyland story to retailers and consumers. That story on the way, and remember, more always available at MidwestFarmReport.com.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire, Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 p.m., I'll be joined with UW Wisconsin Law School professor Aaron Barbato to talk about immigration processes. We dispel myths and give you the real scoop.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
At WisconsinDairy.org. Now, Samantha, you're a busy gal. You cover a lot of miles, and some of those are attending trade shows. Let's just start with how you work a trade show versus me. I walk around collecting bags of goody-goodies, things that I may never use, but I must have right now. That's the way a lot of people approach a trade show. You have got a completely different focus when you show up at a trade show. Explain.
We do. Our goals at our trade shows is to introduce important buyers, high-level buyers from both retail and food service, to the breadth of Wisconsin cheese. We love to get cheese in mouths. We know that when people taste Wisconsin cheese, they fall in love with it. So our goal at a trade show is to bring those products out to those buyers who make the important decisions about what ends up in their retail case, at the specialty cheese counter, and then also on food service menus.
Right.
So we're there introducing them to new products from Wisconsin. We bring cheese companies to the shows with us so that they can talk directly to those manufacturers about distribution and sales opportunities. And then, like I said, we're really just looking to make people fall in love with Wisconsin. So the secondary goal is that even if you're not a buyer of cheese for a retail or a food service operation, you are probably a consumer of cheese, and we want to make sure you're always consuming Wisconsin cheese.
Right. Now, you just returned from the National Restaurant Trade Show, and you know, just stop and think, people, about how many representatives there might need to hear the story of Wisconsin dairy, Wisconsin cheese. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that is a huge food service event. It is the largest food service event in the United States, and it's pretty close to being one of the largest in the entire world. It takes up the entire McCormick Place in Chicago, so if you've ever been there, you know what that scale looks like. When we go to the restaurant show, it's a little unique from some of the retail-facing events that we go to. We are looking to show our Wisconsin cheeses in application, so we work really closely with Shannon Bonilla, our chef and cheese specialist on staff. She's incredibly talented. She comes up with a lot of great pairings and recipes using Wisconsin cheese that we can then showcase to restaurant operators, chefs, food service buyers, and distributors. In addition, we have 10 cheese companies that are exhibiting with us in the booth that have extensive food service operations so that they can provide those cheeses to those food service operators as needed.
Now, when I go to a trade show booth, aside from the samples, mm-hmm. I may have one specific question. You guys have to be prepared for the gamut of questions at a restaurant show, at any show.
Yes, we do. So we talk a lot about just Wisconsin cheese as a brand. We talk about, you know, how we have more awards than any other state or country, how we are the only state in the country that requires a license. We talk about our Master Cheesemaker program, which is one of the only ones outside of, it is the only one outside of Europe. So we talk a lot about that and looking to elevate those perceptions of Wisconsin cheese. But in addition, we talk about how, especially like at the restaurant show, for example, that I just came from, we talk about how these cheeses can be used in unique and creative ways in application, ways that chefs and restaurant operators may never have thought of before. So at this past show, we had themes every day. Mm. One of our themes was desserts. People don't generally think dessert and cheese, and we got really creative with it. So one of our pairings was the Muscadet Mayhem from Meister. It's a multi-pepper cheese. It's got a little bit of a kick. We paired that with a strawberry wafer to show that you can take a cheese and you can pair it with something really unique that's going to add to the menu. People are going to be really interested in it, and it's going to bring out all those flavors together. So that's our goal at these trade shows, is to showcase our cheeses and to showcase really great creative ways to use them.
Now, these are not just mom and pop shops that show up at the National Restaurant Show, a trade show. We're talking one ingredient added to a menu on some of these operations turns into big, big value dollars.
Yeah, it sure does. So you will run into some of the smaller owned, like the single owned restaurant show, restaurant people at that show. Absolutely. But then you have huge food service distributors who distribute to restaurants all across the world. And then you'll get really big restaurant operators from across the country who have multiple restaurants and multiple locations that they're going to need cheeses for. So, yes, one cheese on a menu for a distributor or for a multi-unit restaurant company is going to be huge.
You know, and something that we take for granted, and I always think about this, especially at World Dairy Expo, when I'm approached by dairy farmers from outside of Wisconsin wanting to create what we've got. And what I mean by that is, here I'm talking with Samantha Castro. She's the head of buyer missions and trade shows for the dairy farmers of Wisconsin. When you're at these trade shows, you're not obliged to one label. You're telling the story of how it's made. I mean, we have a different play than any other trade show booth at these events.
We sure do. So if you can picture this in your head, our trade show booth at the restaurant show, for example, was 1,600 square feet. That's a pretty big space. And in that space, at the front of it, we call it our sampling attendee experience space. We're using the front of that space to draw attendees into the booth with these really creative pairings and unique ways to use cheese. But then behind us and the main feature of the booth are all these individual cheese companies that are in our booth exhibiting their own product. It's a really great opportunity for them to come at a, you know, lower cost than if they were trying to get a booth on their own. When I talk about booths and monetary value, typically a 10 by 10 booth, so 100 square feet at a trade show is about $100 per square foot once you add in not just the space, but all the things you need for the booth, furnishings, carpet, electrical, and then your staffing, right? So that's $10,000. It's a lot of money. And some of these cheese companies are small. They don't have huge marketing departments. So we're there to help them by providing them within a space within our own booth. And then that way, they have the opportunity to make those sales without having to worry too much about the operations and the logistics and the cost behind a trade show booth. So that's how we're unique.
Well, and you talk about the logistics behind the booth, but Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin also there to help with the logistics. If you get a nibble, I got a lead. Now they want me to be able to ship so many units every Monday or something like that. It's not like once the trade show is over, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin says, okay, see you later.
Right, exactly. And we have an amazing regional marketing team that is located all over the country. They come to these trade shows with us, so they're there to be that extra help for sales, right? So they're there to help the cheese companies and the buyer navigate the relationship and how they can work together really well.
Again, if you're just joining us, Samantha Castro is along with us. She is the director of buyer missions and trade shows for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. I always pivot you back to wisconsindairy.org. It's more than just our June dairy events, which we hope you're going to engage in multiple locations across the state. It's more than just the recipes and how you can incorporate Wisconsin dairy into your daily operations or your families. It is also about the bigger picture of sharing Wisconsin dairy beyond our borders. Now, you're up for another show that's in New Orleans, and this one, every trade show has got a little different lilt, a little different angle. Tell me about the one in New Orleans.
So we're heading to the International Dairy Deli Bakery Association show, or IDDBA, as we lovingly call it. That show is very different from the restaurant show. So where the restaurant show is food service focused, IDDBA is very retail focused. And the attendees at that show are very high level decision makers. They're the head honchos that are making all the decisions. So it's a really good opportunity for us to get in front of those head buyers. We have a lot of meetings that take place. Our entire regional marketing team goes. They are lining up meetings all day long. We give them two meeting spaces in the booth so that they have a nice, comfortable, quiet place to sit down and have those meetings. And then in addition, we have a larger booth that has 10 cheese companies in it. And then we also kind of, we don't sponsor, but we showcase the Wisconsin Cheese Pavilion. So we have our 10 companies in a booth, and then around us is another 20 to 25 Wisconsin cheese companies. So there's a huge Wisconsin dairy presence at the IDDBA show that we're super proud of.
Yeah, and rightly so. Like I said, folks, follow along. This is not something that just takes place once a month or something like that. These trade shows are routinely popping up on calendars. And as you can hear from Samantha, these decision makers can make a big impact on dairy sales within the state. Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin there to help facilitate that. And remember, it's all funded by the hardworking dairy farm families out there that love to share their story and love to share their product. Find out more, wisconsindairy.org, and follow their story no matter where they are. Samantha Castro along with us again, Director of Buyer Missions and Trade Shows, on her way to New Orleans on behalf of Wisconsin Dairy. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Politicians agree that school kids should get the health benefits of milk. That's next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. There's not a lot of bipartisan support for anything in Washington these days, but the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act is an exception. Agriculture committees in both the House and Senate have signed off on the bill, which expands milk options in school meal settings. Senator Peter Welch is a Democrat from Vermont.
Bottom line, the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids is to put milk on the table for kids. A lot of temptation for kids these days is sodas, you know, sugary drinks that are not nutritionally helpful. So I found a lot of support for this, and the flexibility that we have in the bill for some choice, I think, helps. And it also acknowledges that some kids are lactose intolerant, and obviously we want to protect them from doing something that would be bad for their health.
Welch predicts the bill has a 60% chance of full passage.
If we get it on the floor and get the cooperation of leadership, we get the votes. This is one of those areas of rare bipartisanship that we have right now. The Ag Committee has always had a willingness on the part of those of us who represent rural areas, whether Republican or Democrat, to work together. Our effort is to persuade leadership to put it on the floor, and I think we get it there. We get a vote, and people feel good about it.
Welch returns tomorrow to talk about immigrant workers in the dairy industry. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Michael Negron of the Small Business Majority.
You know, the Trump administration thinks that they're doing a solid for small business with their policies. And so having business owners out there talking about how, whether it's tariffs, whether it's potential cuts to health care, how it's going to hurt their bottom line, how it's going to hurt their consumers or their employees. I do think that will have a real impact. Every time he does something, he gets really bad feedback and he retreats in the face of it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston, waiting in Los Angeles to see what happens next following 3 days of protests over ICE raids.
This morning, sharp political reaction after President Trump federalized California's National Guard without state approval. It's the first time a president has taken control of a state's National Guard without approval in 60 years. Democrats say the move could undermine democracy. Republicans defend the president's move, saying it was necessary to maintain law and order.
ABC's Perry Russum. President Trump's travel ban on 12 mostly Middle Eastern and African countries and his partial travel ban on 7 other countries went into effect at midnight. Kilmar Obrego-Garcia, the man who made headlines for being mistakenly deported to a prison in El Salvador, is back in the U.S. to face criminal charges for alleged human smuggling. The charges stem from a 2022 traffic stop. Israeli forces seizing the aid boat that activist Greta Thunberg and others had been trying to get to Gaza. This is ABC News.